And today on Midnight Cab, Walker Devereaux deals with the mystery of the screaming kettle.
Walker, where are you now?
Hello, Krista.
Hello, Walker.
It's a big bopper here. A chantilly lace with a pretty face.
Shut up.
Oh.
It's not even time yet, and you're all wound up.
That's funny, I don't feel all wound up.
I thought writers were supposed to be, like, really sophisticated.
We are.
Well, you're going to come off like a big stoop if you don't smarten up. So how much time do you want?
I don't know.
An hour?
We're down to 3 cabs tonight. Dwayne's booked off sick again. So 90 minutes tops, okay?
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, sell your novel and it'll be worth it. Become famous, okay? And we can all say we knew Walker Devereaux way back when.
Yeah. Question. What is the strangest feeling in the world? Answer. The strangest feeling in the world is loving a woman who's pregnant with your child and who doesn't really want you in her life anymore. You feel light as a feather, disembodied. January 10th. Hey, brand new year. The good thing, I'm back in my old apartment over the pawn shop on Church Street. I checked and it was available. I mean, they were literally kicking a bunch of girls out for back rent as I came in. They were clumping down the stairs with cardboard boxes. Well, it's the same old crappy furniture, but it feels more like home than that room on Pembroke Street ever did. Even the roaches seemed happy to see me. This is where Krista and I lived together for a few months. She'd have to leave her wheelchair in the car and I'd carry her up 3 flights of stairs. This is where we fell in love. Made love.
Hi.
Oh, hi.
Sorry I'm late. The hat works. Well, I kind of thought a camouflage hat might be easy to spot in a bar in Yorkville.
That was my theory.
Joe McIntosh.
Hi, Walker.
Devereaux, author of the Blue Planet.
Right.
Well, I'm really pleased to meet you, Walker.
Likewise.
You're a writer.
I am.
Damn straight. When you've been in this business as long as I have, real writers stand out like skunks at a garden party. Want a cigarette?
No thanks. I roll my own.
Mainly what I see is an incredible amount of affectation and unreality. Just like a garden party. And demand. This is politically important, therefore it must be published, and if you don't publish it, then you are one of them. But once in a while, somebody really neat comes along.
Oh, jeez.
Good evening. Can I get you something?
You'll save my life if you do. Jack Daniels on the rocks. And I think this gentleman needs another beer.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, Walker, you write very well. I want to help you if you want me to help you.
Oh, yeah, sure. I would like anything.
Now, the thing is, I work for the other press. You sent your manuscript to the other press?
Right.
Why did you send it to us?
Oh, well, I didn't want to start off with Macmillan or something. I thought I should send it to small publishers because, well, it's my first book. And so I got a list, and you were on the list.
Uh-huh. But how much do you know about the publishing scene in Toronto?
Not, a lot. I'm not from here. I'm from Big River, south of Thunder Bay, a little bit, about 20 kilometers.
The other press is a lesbian press, Walker. It publishes lesbian authors.
Oh.
You didn't know that?
No.
Somehow that doesn't surprise me.
And then she smiled at me, and her smile was really fierce and really warm all at the same time, like a flash fire. I guess she was in her 40s, thick, gray-black hair pulled back kind of carelessly, attractive, though, tumbling down to her collar, bright, wise, gray eyes, tan skin, a wide mouth, fingernails chewed down. A big personality in a small body. She should have been about, like, 6 feet tall.
It's like you're underwater.
Yeah?
The reader is underwater. All the characters are underwater. It's very disconcerting. It's very powerful.
Jeez.
And the story, the two brothers, it's pure gothic, Walker. It's mighty strange.
It is.
Where did all this come from?
Well,
how happy are you allowed to be before it's against the law? This was the first time anyone who knew anything had talked to me about my writing. And she said it was good. I guess I must have looked like, well, a stoop. Sitting there with my hunting cap on, a big silly grin on my face, eating up every word. But they went off like some big gong and traveled through my body at the speed of light. It was like I never knew how much this idea of being a writer meant to me. Never guessed. She said she'd like to pass the book around to some people she knew at some other publishing houses, if it was all right with me. It was all right with me.
Joe, the thing that gets me is the thought that Hemingway walked around here, maybe on this very street, before he wrote any of those great books, like they were all just waiting in his head somewhere.
Yeah, but he had to do some living first.
Sure, but he...
Hey, Walker. Are you there?
Oh, hi, Krista.
How'd it go? Are you famous yet?
Look, I'm on a call. I'm, like, driving her home now.
Oh, sorry.
Who is that?
Oh, just a friend. My girlfriend, sort of. I don't know.
Sounds complicated.
Yeah.
Joe lived on Brunswick Avenue below DuPont in a brick house with a large bay window at the front. I pulled up. She wrote her home phone number down on her business card and gave it to me.
It'll probably be a while before we hear from anyone. Have you got an extra copy?
Yeah.
Drop it off when you get a chance. It'll make things go faster.
Oh, thanks. I mean, thanks.
Well, I can't promise anything, you know, but we'll see what happens.
Right.
Good night, Walker.
Night.
She walked quickly up the sidewalk, briefcase and files under her arm, and that's when I noticed that someone else was watching her, too, sitting in a car parked in the line of cars on the other side of the street. When I drove by, all I could see was the white smear of a woman's face behind the misted glass looking at Joe. A friend? A girlfriend? Another person feeling weird about another person? There's a lot of that going around. Anyway, by the time I got to the end of the block, the blue Mazda's lights blazed on, and then she pulled out too.
Hey, Walker. Are you ready to go to work?
Hey, Krista. Almost.
What do you mean, almost? You had your 90 minutes. The phone's ringing off the hook here.
I just have to deliver something.
Like what?
Another copy of my novel. Joan needs it, and so I thought I might as well get it right now, so I went back to my apartment.
Are you working or not?
I'm working. I'm almost back there. I just need 5 minutes.
So, was she nice?
Oh, yeah, she was... she was wonderful.
Oh, yeah? Is she going to publish it?
No. As it turns out, she can't. She's a lesbian. I mean, it's like a lesbian press. The other press. But she's going to show it to some people she knows.
You sent it to a lesbian press?
By mistake.
That's not a mistake. That's just like incompetence.
Oh, yeah?
Krista and I had almost finished arguing by the time I pulled up in front of Joe's place again. The lights were still on in the downstairs bay window, so Joe was still awake. And there was just her name beside the lower buzzer in the front porch. No friend. Chances were I wouldn't be disturbing anything. So I buzzed. And that's when I heard it. Coming from inside her apartment. Persistent. Shrill. I buzzed again. Waited a long time. No one. Buzzed again. What was she doing? That kettle was either going to boil dry or it was going to blow up if she didn't take it off the stove in a hurry.
Joe!
I buzzed the top button for the upstairs apartment. No one answered there either.
Joe!
It was weird. I mean, Joe could be taking a bath, but then maybe she wasn't, so what was I supposed to do? Walk away and let the house burn down? All the windows on the top floor of the house were in darkness. I stood out on the front sidewalk for a moment, then walked around to look for a side door. There was one, but it was bolted and locked. A faint light fell across the snow from a basement window. I crouched down beside it and peeked in. The light seemed to be coming from an open door somewhere up above. I could see part of a flight of old wooden stairs looking stark in the deep shadows, and a bit of the basement floor, too, and something shining. It spread out slowly across the cement, like a pool of oil. Except it was red. I ran now, ran to the front, slipping, sliding, buzzed again, which was kind of crazy when you think about it, and then kicked the door in.
Joe!
Rushed through her living room, found the kitchen, and found the door to that led down to the basement. It was open. I crossed over to it, looked down the stairs, feeling like someone opening a drawer to check a mouse trap, knowing already what he was going to find. Joe, lying at the bottom of the stairs, looking back up at me, except her eyes were closed and her hair floating in blood.
Yes, 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 she's still alive. Yeah, I checked. Her wrist and her neck, too, but it's really faint. Hurry. Yes, all right, hurry!
I sat on the cement floor, holding Joe's head up and trying to stem the flow of blood from her scalp with a tea towel, my coat thrown over her. Sat there until the ambulance arrived. And then I went back up the stairs. There was a bottle of Jack Daniel's Sour Mash whiskey on the counter, Joe's brand, and a half glass of whiskey on the table. Ice cubes almost melted away. The ambulance attendants assumed it was an accident, a fall down the stairs, the same kind of thing they see all the time. But if Joe already had a drink, then who was the boiling kettle for?
Look, call me as soon as you get home, all right?
Joe had three messages on her answering machine.
Look, where are you? It's after 11. Are you there? Joe? I'm not going to sleep until you call.
All from the same woman.
Okay, so I got angry. I have a right to get angry, don't I? Are you the only one? Good old Del's supposed to keep her mouth shut. Is that it? It's all going to hell. Everything's going to hell.
The ambulance attendants looked at me kind of funny as they were rolling Joe out on the stretcher, me standing in her living room listening to her tape. But I'd noticed the flashing lights on her answering machine before when I'd called them. And, well, the whole thing, it just didn't seem like an accident to me. Two cops were coming up the sidewalk as Joe passed them, still unconscious, secured under blankets, her head wrapped in bandages. They talked to me for about an hour. Their conclusion: she was probably a little tipsy, stumbled. I said, probably.
Hi, I heard you asking for Joe.
Hi, yeah.
And you're...
Walker Devereaux?
Oh, the Blue Planet man. The writer Joe went to see.
Yeah, I was coming back with another copy of my book. Yeah, I found her.
So we heard. I'm Ruth Rumstein, and this is Del Richards.
Hi.
She's upset. They say Joe has a good chance, if they can get her through the rest of the night.
It was after 2:00 in the morning. Joe was still unconscious. I'd gone back to Mr. Piatelli's garage before I went over to the hospital to explain in person to Krista why I was going to be screwed up for the rest of my shift. She understood. Well, she more than understood, because I was standing there in front of her with Joe's bloodstains on my shirt sleeves. I said I'd get cleaned up and maybe we could have breakfast together after her shift before she drove home to her father's place like we used to. I told her I'd got our old apartment back She just kind of looked up at me for a long time. Then she said, "Okay." I was afraid to ask. "Okay, what?"
"Joe and Dale and I, we're all partners in the other press. We've been running the place since the last ice age. It's really been Joe. She's been the force behind everything."
"Yeah? She'll be all right."
"Would anybody here like tea, coffee? I have some bran muffins, donuts."
"Oh, I'll have a coffee, please."
Coffee, two coffees.
How about you? Would you like a tea or a coffee?"
"No. That stuff would kill you. Do you have any juice?"
"There's a machine in the hall."
"I know that. I meant fresh."
"No."
Thank you very much. "Dell, I was wondering here, Ruth. You had like three messages on Joe's answering machine."
"How do you know that?"
"Oh, I was like there when the police were there, so it kind of occurred to me. Did Joe ever call you back?"
"That's none of your business."
"Yeah, I know. I was just wondering."
"Just what?"
"Oh, come on, Dell. I don't need this."
"Sorry.
Need what?" Dell sat crouched in a chair in the corner of the room, wrapped up in her long suede coat, her wool scarf still wrapped around her head. Didn't need to be bothered. Didn't need to be questioned. Didn't need for this to happen to Joe, to herself. Her eyes darted around, then landed on me for a moment, then took off again. She hugged her knees, looked at me again, looked away. One thing was certain. Dell was in pain. She was really suffering. And I went back to the garage, picked up Krista. We had breakfast, and then we didn't go to her father's place. We just drove to the apartment. It was incredible. And I carried her up the three flights of stairs like I'd done so many times before. And she said, "I'm tired of trying not to love you, Walker." And she said,
"Walker, listen. If you want this, me and the baby, then you better be around for a long time. Because I don't want this baby to have a father for a couple of years and then you walk out. It's better not to be together at all. So you think about this baby and then you decide. Because I don't want you to break its heart. You understand?"
And I did. I understood. I said, "Yes, yes." It was incredible.
"Hi, Ruth. How's Joe now?"
"She's still unconscious. Compound fracture to the skull.
God.
Oh, but her vital signs, everything looks much stronger. So they say. She could regain consciousness any time. Isn't she?"
Krista was back home at her father's. It was early evening the same day. I couldn't stay away because, well, I liked Joe, and because I kept thinking about that kettle, the shrieking kettle. If someone had tried to kill Joe, wouldn't they want to finish the job? Ruth was still at the hospital, and Dell, looking even worse than before, and some other woman. Ruth introduced me to Joe's sister, Caroline. She was friendly, considering. We sat out in the hall.
"I took a cab over to her place."
"When?"
"Just now. I flew in this afternoon. We planned to meet at 6 at Sutton Place. The hotel?"
"Yeah."
"We were going to eat there at 6, but she didn't show up. So I called, and there was no answer. I waited some more. It just wasn't like her. I mean, not to call, leave a message. Something. So I took a cab over to her house. Her landlady told me what happened. She told me about you, too. Thank you. Thank you so much."
"Oh, well, anybody would..."
"You probably saved her life."
"I don't think..."
"I don't know her friends. I don't really know who any of these people are."
"She has a lot of friends."
"Who Who's that strange woman? The one who keeps pacing back and forth?
Oh, that's Del.
I sat with Caroline for a little while. Finally, she fell silent. There was nothing more to say, but I didn't want to leave. I walked down the hall and called my friend, Inspector Kiss, homicide. Maybe he could help me.
Yeah, yeah, and sometimes, Walker, a banana is just a banana.
Yeah, I know, but...
The thing is, kid, you worry too much. You keep it up, you'll never see 20.
I am 20.
No. Well, congratulations. Anyway, this kettle business. The woman, you know, she could have been making herself some soup. I mean, a cup of soup.
Oh, yeah, but I... Oh, Inspector Kiss, I gotta go. I'll call you back. Hi, Del.
Hi. Did I interrupt something?
Oh, no, it's okay.
Want to hear something really weird?
Sure.
You asked me whether Jo called me last night before she fell. Well, she did. To say, well, once again, hey, Del, grow up, will ya? Get over it. It's finished.
Oh.
Been together over 10 years. It's finished, she says.
Yeah?
Yeah. As if by saying it, it would just make it happen. Joe's had a real good imagination. Oh, Joe. I know I'm really freaked out.
Yeah, I know how it feels.
No. No, I mean, she phoned to tell me not to call anymore that night. Because her sister had just called. She was on her way over.
Oh? But how many sisters does she...
One. That one, sitting down there in the hall.
She told me she'd just flown in today. I mean, just a few hours ago.
Yeah, well, I know. That's what she said to me, too. She's been saying that to everyone. Look, I'm a wreck. I can't cope with anything more. You were the one talking to the cops at Joe's. So you tell them. All right?
Then she turned, walked back down the hall, made a half circle around Caroline. They kind of stared at each other. Then Del hurried back into Joe's room. Del was getting flakier by the moment. I called Inspector Kiss again and asked him for two favors. He said,
Kid, contrary to appearances, I am not your fairy godmother.
And then he came through with both of them.
Well, hello. What are you doing here?
Waiting for you. I thought you might be checking out.
Oh? Hmm. Well, I'm flying back to Montreal. I need to make some arrangements, and then I'm coming back. I want to be by my sister's side.
Yeah, well, I thought that police guard, Inspector Kiss, posted beside Joe's bed might spook you out.
What? What are you talking about?
You. Caroline. You made two mistakes. One, you knew I was a writer. What you didn't know was I'm a cab driver. It was me who dropped Joe off last night. It was me who saw a woman watching her, sitting in a very conspicuous blue 92 Mazda RX-7.
How astonishing. How really clever of you. And two?
No, two. You overlooked the possibility that Joe might call someone to say you were on your way over to her place between the time you called her from some phone booth to say you'd arrived a day early and the time you allowed for some fictitious cab to drive you there.
I see. Walker. That is your name, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Walker, you've got it all wrong. You see, I did come up a day early, all right, and I did find her, dear. But I was frightened. I couldn't hurt her. But I thought I'd be blamed.
So you just left her there? To, like, bleed to death on the floor?
Yes. That's right.
Why? Because of who she was? Because your family
kicked her out years ago and she'd made a life for herself and never once come back to any of you to admit she was a terrible person, an abomination, that she was sorry?
Walker, dear, you've been talking to one of her little dyke friends, haven't you?
I've been talking to Del.
Yeah. Listen, you little piece of garbage. No one's going to believe what you think you saw or what you think you know. Now get out of my way.
You thought you'd murdered her. You expected to find her dead.
You creep!
Everyone turned to look at us, and Caroline swept across the lobby and out the door. She was tough, Joe's sister, and desperate, and, as it turned out, doomed. No one had to believe me. A few days later, Joe regained consciousness and she said the magic word. Caroline.
You were bluffing?
A little. At the hotel, because Inspector Kiss hadn't confirmed yet that Caroline drove a blue 92 Mazda RX-7. That was the second favor. It was parked out at the airport in Montreal. They hadn't found it yet, but I was pretty sure.
But what about that Dell person? She was in love with Joe, wasn't she? And she'd been rejected.
A lot of us get rejected. But we don't always hit people over the heads, do we?
You've never been rejected, Walker. You don't know what it feels like.
I have a vague idea. Anyway, Joe had her Jack Daniels. She'd put on the kettle to make a coffee or tea for her guest, and then she was attacked.
So?
Well, Dell doesn't drink tea or coffee. I heard her at the hospital. She said that stuff will kill you. She wanted the juice.
So, why, Walker? Why?
Inspector Kiss said he couldn't tell me. Privileged information. Crown attorneys would slit his throat. Then he told me.
Between you and me, of course. Seems like there was this girl who was the elder daughter of this rich Montreal family. She didn't turn out quite the way her papa had planned. In fact, so different was this girl, he threw her out. Wrote her out of the family, the money, the world. The years go by, he passes away. The mother, now very ill herself, regrets the past and changes her will. Half her estate will go to this long-lost daughter. But there's one other daughter, younger, a stockbroker named Caroline. And it seems Caroline has been stealing from her client's accounts, and it seems like Caroline is about to be exposed. She'll need all her mother's estate to keep her pretty little behind out of jail. And now, half the estate is going to her sister, Joanne. Unless Joanne predeceases her mother. Well, she almost did.
If it wasn't for you, Walker. My Walker.
Joe's doing great. She's walking around now. Doesn't even need her cane.
Better than me.
No. No. Not even close.
This is the last time I'm coming up to this apartment, you know. I'm not getting stuck up here like I was before with those three flights of stairs.
Jeez, I just got it back.
Love is hell, isn't it, Walker?
Not exactly. It's more like, well, it's like this.
Is it?
And it's like this. And it's like this.
Is it?
You know all this.
I know all this.
Oh, jeez.
Midnight Cab was written by James W. Nickel. David Ferry was Walker Devereaux. Jacqueline Samuda was Krista. Neil Monroe was Inspector Kiss. Maureen McRae was Joe. Kyra Harper was Dell. Denise Jones was Ruth. Special guest was Lori Payton as Caroline. Doris Petrie was the cart lady and Robert Smith was the waiter. Music was composed by Milan Kinlicka. Linda Grierson is the casting consultant. Joanne Anka, the recording engineer, with sound effects by John Stewart. Midnight Cab was produced and directed by Bill Howell.